Hi everyone. I just want to give a little shout out that Business Barn Raising is now open for the year. This time around, we are really focusing on helping people who have been interested in incorporating hypnotherapy into their practice get started. And the most important things to get started really are focusing on your practice location, getting all the systems in place that you are going to need to provide services. Those are things like insurance and contracts. And finally, finding the clients that you need to run your practice. And in Business Barn Raising, we cover all of these areas, both in lesson content format as well as supported coaching calls. So if you think this is something that might be helpful to you, be sure to reach out and get signed up. We will be starting in June. Hi, welcome to Animals and Aquatics and OT. I'm Gina, your co-host, wife, mom, occupational therapist, OTA professor, lifelong equestrian, and probably a few other things that I'm forgetting. I'm excited to talk with you today about finding your perfect practice location. We discuss this a lot in Business Barn Raising because people often feel that if they don't own a horse or if they don't own a farm, that incorporating hypnotherapy won't work for them. And people ask us all the time, do you have a farm? Do you have a pool? How do you do all these things? And it's true. We have a very small farm, mostly for our therapy goats and a therapeutic garden, but we don't do a lot of sessions at our home site. We do some, but the majority of our sessions are at our partner facilities. And that has been a really long and interesting process. And I thought that with sharing it with you today, that it might be helpful in thinking about if you've already partnered with a place, what that might be like and what it's bringing for you. But then also, if you are interested in incorporating hypnotherapy or working in the aquatic environment, finding a farm to partner with for some animal assisted therapy, or looking to get out into nature, and like, how do you find the location that you're going to practice from? You know, there's a lot of components that go into it, and I've been through so many different facility meetings, and I thought, this is a great topic because it's a question that a lot of people have. It's a barrier that a lot of clinicians face, and it has such a big impact on our practice when we are working in these unique practice settings. So to kick it off today, we're going to be talking about how do you find the practice location that you're going to be if you don't own a facility. And partnering with facilities is something that my colleague and I, Melanie D'Amico Richards, we provided presentations at both the AHA conference as well as the PATH regional conference about partnering with a PATH facility, because there are definitely some benefits for partnering with a PATH facility if you are interested in incorporating hypnotherapy into your clinical practice. And when we think about that partner facility, some of the very basic things to consider is distance. So distance from your home. How far do you have to drive to get to your work location? And this wouldn't be any different than an employer-employee situation, but thinking about as you're building maybe your private practice, and if you have a smaller caseload number, are you going to drive there for one or two clients? You know, how far is that distance really going to be? Because the further that distance is, often we put a higher threshold on the minimum number of clients that we're going to see. And then again, that can be a barrier to getting started. So location from your home site is one factor, but then location or distance in relationship to the populations that you hope to serve. So thinking about, you know, how close is this facility to a population center, or what major routes are people going to be traveling to get to this particular facility? You know, what is the population density around this facility? Those are all good things to consider, although there are practices in very rural areas that are very successful, as well as practices that are in very populated areas that are successful. So one is not better than the other. It's just something to consider how your clients are going to get to this facility. And when we're thinking about that, we also want to think about hospitals or access to emergency medical care. So whether this is a farm facility, a horse farm, an aquatic facility, how far are we from the nearest medical center? What would that look like if there were an incident and that person needed medical care? How quickly could care arrive? So that's something else to consider when we're just looking at, and to be honest, the way I looked at a lot of these is, did a Google search, horse barns, beginner riding lessons, looking for different facilities and looking at their websites, looking at their locations, looking at who they were drawing in. So I had an idea before I even reached out. And I would say that my outreach probably at this point is between 15 and 20 facilities. And of those, I've probably visited about nine. And of those, I'm currently partnered with two different facilities. So it's a pretty narrow funnel when we look at it from the top to the bottom. So sometimes when I'm looking at a website or, talking with a farm owner, I can eliminate that site pretty quickly based on some information that they can provide about the location, the distance, traveling to get there before we even really get any further into what amenities or what the facility is like. So the next thing, if location is, it's a distance I'm willing to drive, if it seems like it might have a good setup, then I'm going to start looking at, okay, what's actually available at this facility. And when we start with that, I kind of want to start with the nuts and bolts. So accessibility and parking and bathrooms, definitely bathrooms. So accessibility, parking, and bathrooms. How accessible is it? How safe is it going to be for my clients to get there? So, if I have clients that have mobility impairments, how easy is it for them to access the facility? If I'm looking at my clients who are on the autism spectrum, how safe is it going to be? Are they going to be entering in through an area where the horses are and their parent may not be, really horse savvy, and so that could be a safety risk? Or are they entering into a lobby or a waiting area where it's really a more controlled situation? Parking, is there enough parking? I mean, that's just a really simple thing. Is there enough parking? Is there enough parking for me, for my clients, for the volunteers or fieldwork students that are going to be helping me? Where's everybody going to park? Is it going to be easy for my families to find a place to park? Does it seem intuitive as far as like where to park and where to go? Those things really help the flow for families when they start coming to see us again, reducing that barrier to starting services with my practice. I want to look at those things. So that accessibility piece, how easy is it to get my clients from their car to my treatment area, wherever that may be on that facility? And we'll get into that as you listen along here, because I'm going to give you some of the scenarios of the facilities that I've looked at so you can kind of listen to maybe some of my thought process on that. And then bathrooms. Like, we need a bathroom. I don't want a porta potty. I want a bathroom. This is my clinic. This is my clinic space. It's where I'm treating. If unless we're out in a nature-based setting where the expectation is a little bit different as far as toileting, and the type of clientele that I'm working with is a little bit different, I want a bathroom. And so that's really important to me. And I think it's really important to families. And depending on where my age group is going, also a changing table or an opportunity to have a place to change children, because certainly many of the children that we work with are not toilet trained, even into the older ages. So thinking about, accessibility for bathroom, toileting, hygiene. So a working sink, wash hands, pre and post, great for hygiene goals, but also just cleanliness. After we're around the horses or we're making horse treats or we've been doing any sort of brushing or grooming activity, all of those things, I would like to have my client be able to wash their hands at the end. And again, often a lot of the clients that I work with, they do have hygiene goals. So being able to incorporate that right into our session is really nice. And having the bathroom and the sink there is something that I'm definitely looking for in facilities. So those are kind of the then like that next step of checklist. And sometimes I can assess that without going there. And sometimes I need to go there and see what that looks like to determine if that's even going to be an option. Once I've determined the basic, there's enough parking and they have a working bathroom that I would feel comfortable having my clients go in, because I have come across some bathrooms that I would not feel comfortable asking a family to use, then I start to look at what does this facility offer to me as an occupational therapist? What are the natural affordances in this environment? And I'm not looking yet at horses and horse care. I'm looking at what is the layout of this particular barn or facility or park? What is the layout of this pool facility? And where could I work? Where are those little spots or places that I can carve out a place to do some treatment activities when a client is dysregulated, or when I want to work on some land-based activities, or when I want to do a pre and post test? So do they have a clinic space? Is there an activity room? Is there a classroom? Is there an outdoor classroom? One of our favorite outdoor treatment locations is a beautiful outdoor classroom. It's one of my favorite places to work in the outdoor environment. So it can look a lot of different ways, but what's there naturally? And I want to feel like there's room for me when I'm coming, when a facility manager is meeting with me or an owner is meeting with me. I want to feel like there's room at this particular facility for me. So if they open up, you know, a closet space and it's just filled from bottom to top with stuff and they say, oh, well, this is a space we could clean out for you. That often doesn't mean it's ever going to get cleaned out for you. So I'm looking to see, you know, are there natural intuitive spaces in this facility that I could work in? Are there a variety of different sensory spaces? So that could be, you know, bright light with a table, that could be low light with a quieter area to get away. It could be some place that's a little bit kind of off the side. It could be a small shed that they're really not using a lot. There's a lot of different opportunities. It could be at the end of the aisle where nobody kind of really goes down there. It could be a small stall. There's a lot of options, but you know, what is this facility willing to offer me? And in the aquatic environment, you know, what's around the pool deck? Is there a place with some tables and chairs, with some potted plants, that it's kind of a nice place to sit and work? Is it all hard concrete surfaces? Are there bleachers or comfortable places for families to sit? What about changing rooms or locker rooms? So in the aquatic environment, I'm looking at a lot of those things. What's that, again, those environmental affordances? Is it loud and echoey? Is it small and cozy? Does it have a homey feel? Does it have a very competitive feel? So thinking about in the aquatic environment, you know, how much space is on the pool deck between the building wall and the edge of the pool? Is that enough space to do some land-based activities? Or is it a pretty small space where the main feature is the pool? And then I have to think about some other options for times when my client isn't quite ready to transition into the water, or we're working on some other activities that require land-based, or we've practiced in the pool and now I want to see that carryover piece. So when I go to a facility that has a pool, I'm going to be looking at it from that perspective. And the good side of things, most aquatic environments have great bathrooms, changing rooms. So we're definitely better off there than at our farm facilities or our outdoor facilities when it comes to bathroom and changing areas. So now that I've assessed where I might work and what spaces are naturally available to me, now I'm going to get into the next like step. And for me, that's looking at those specific tools that go along with whatever treatment tool or strategy I'm using at that particular facility. So it may be more than one thing. If they have an opportunity for a clinic space, do they have suspended equipment? Do they have a mat table? Do they have an area to do some fine motor activities? What is going to be there? And if I'm looking at incorporating hippotherapy, now it's when I'm going to start looking at the horse facility part. So what does the arena look like? What does the fencing look like? What is the footing? If I'm going to be walking for a few hours on the footing, I want to go in the arena and walk around a little bit. Really deep footing is super tiring and can also give you shin splints. And obviously really hard footing isn't ideal either. The horse isn't going to move as well. And again, you're going to have a lot of concussion on your joints as you're walking around in that footing at a more brisk pace along with the horse. So what's the footing like? Is it an outdoor arena? And if it is, what is the drainage? Are there mud puddles? Is the footing getting really soupy after a rain? So I don't mind actually going to facilities after the weather has not been ideal, or in that like winter spring transition where it gets a little goopy, because it really allows me to see what's the drainage like at this facility. What does the arena footing hold up to? How is it maintained? That's, you know, a really nice thing to see if I'm going to a potential partner facility. You know, I want to see if the footing is being maintained. And do they have an indoor arena space that I can work in? And that might be whether I'm working with my client on the horse or whether I'm working with my client on the ground. I like having that indoor arena space sometimes to do some other gross motor activities. So what does that space look like? How safe is it? Are there broken boards? Are there open areas? Are there gates that I can close on all sides? Is it close to a pasture or stalls? So some indoor arenas, the horse stalls are kind of right beside the indoor, or on an outdoor arena, it might share a common fence line with a pasture area. And those are all things I'm going to consider, because my equestrian brain is going to say, well, when the horse in the pasture does something stupid and runs off bucking, my horse is going to alert to that too. That's in a treatment session. And that's more risk factor. It's more alertness that I have to have. Are those horses typically turned out when I'm going to be providing OT services? So that's something now I'm starting to look at when I'm looking at those specific equestrian facilities. So I've looked at the arena. I want to see what the tack room looks like. And to be perfectly honest, when I worked as an employee, I was super spoiled with the setup that was available. I got to design the clinical space. So I got to pick my own suspended equipment. I got to have a ball pit, a crash mat, a climbing wall, a fine motor room, gross motor room, mat table, vibration plate, ball pit. If I already said that, I really loved my ball pit. And not everybody did, but I did. And so those were, you know, clinical tools. And then when I was incorporating hippotherapy, I had all the tack, you know, I had all the equipment that a therapist could possibly want. So I had a hard two-handled surcingle, a soft two-handled surcingle, three different types of single-handled surcingles, pads with soft handles, pads with no handles, sheepskin pads in three different sizes, different blocks that I could customize in, Western pads that were suede, so they had a lot of stick, Western pads that were nylon, so they were really slippery. I mean, every kind of combination that I could want, I had. And so thinking about if I'm coming into a tack room, is there space for me to bring my equipment? Where am I going to store my equipment? Because now as an independent contractor, right, I'm bringing my own equipment along and I need a safe, secure location to store that where it's going to be accessible to me, to the horse handler who's going to be preparing the horse. So what does that space look like? How adjacent is it to the areas that we're going to have the horses getting ready? And as I'm starting to look through those, and I want to look at the stalls, are they maintained? Are they clean? Are they in good repair? If I wanted to do an activity where we were in or near the stalls, I want to make sure that, again, they're being maintained, that they're nice and clean. the overall cleanliness of the horse facilities is really important to me. So I've now sort of assessed that. And then typically, if I consider a facility, I will be coming back a second or third time to assess the horses separately. So before that contract is ever finalized, I'm going to come back and then assess the movement of the horses that they have available to make that final determination whether that horse or the horses that they have are going to meet the needs that I have or the clients that I would like to serve. And then with those horse facility parts, how am I going to transfer on and off the horse? And a three-step mounting block is the minimum. It's really hard. Even for, kids that are really mobile, maybe they have a diagnosis of ADHD, still getting on from a three-step mounting block it's not ideal for me biomechanically. It's not ideal for the client biomechanically. It's not ideal for the horse. And since we're not using typically a traditional saddle and stirrup setup, there is no like put your foot in the stirrup and swing your leg over. Besides motor planning wise, most of my clients couldn't do that. So a high wooden steps, that works. So like a mounting platform or, ideally a mounting ramp. It really is the easiest thing because with the ramp, you have the gradation of you can do your transfer anywhere along that ramp's surface. So you can really upgrade and downgrade that ability to transfer on and off. And it really makes it easier if you're working with adolescents or adults to make those transfers safe, effective, and really to preserve your own body mechanics. So those are things that I'm looking at from an equestrian facility standpoint. If I am going to be coming as a therapist that's going to be incorporating hippotherapy into my client's plan of care, those are some of the things that I'm looking at. So that's just like the physical side of things, right? And when we're looking at pools, when we're looking at the aquatic environment, I'm looking at what is the entry and exit from the water. So is it a ladder? Is it stairs? Is it a gradual walk-in? Do they have a chairlift or a Hoyer lift to get somebody who maybe can't transfer in another way into the water and out of the water? What is the temperature of the pool, the size of the pool? What is the lighting like? What other activities might be going on if I'm only renting a portion of that facility or that pool? So, lots of things when I'm looking at that. Again, what is that entrance exit safety component for my clients? What other things might be in my treatment area that I don't have control over? So if there's a swim program and they have a bunch of their equipment stacked up, and I have a kid that likes to throw things into the pool, right? How much of a challenge is that going to be for a safe and effective OT session? So I'm assessing all of those things as really the physical domain of what that partnership would look like. And a lot of times, therapists feel intimidated by like coming into a facility and really starting to assess those things. So having a checklist can be really helpful so you know like these are the types of things I'm looking for, and this is what I actually found when I was there. Because, certainly what we see on a website doesn't necessarily reflect the condition of the facility at that day, at that time when we go. And like I said, I don't mind going on those kind of rainy, groggy days where it might be a bit muddy and gooey, so we can really see what that process is like. And that could even be that a client that is coming to the aquatic environment, how far is parking from the pool deck? How far does that parent need to get that child, and how are they going to get there? How many steps are there, ups, downs, curbs, any of those things that might impact their transition from their car space to us? That all impacts my service delivery. Then we get to the next component, which are like the soft signs. So staffing, no matter which unique environment we're talking about, whether it's nature-based, aquatics, or working with animals, what is the staffing like? Is there maintenance people at the park or the pool that are going to be taking care of the things that I'm not responsible for and testing the water, testing the temperature of the water, weed whacking around the outdoor classroom, clearing up limbs that have fallen down after a storm, grooming and feeding and turning out horses, all of those things. Who are those people? Because a lot of times, those are the people that I'm actually connecting with a lot more often than maybe an executive director or an operations manager. Those administrators, a lot of our stuff is, contracts, billing, invoices, and scheduling. But the day-to-day, is this environment set up the way I need it to be, or the way that my contract states it should be? Often those are, our day-to-day people that are on the ground, and those are the people that I'm going to be working with. So, if possible, I love to meet the barn staff. I love to meet the maintenance folks who are helping really make this place feel like a clean, welcoming clinic space, whatever that looks like. And when we're talking about the equine environment, who is my horse handler going to be? Is it going to be the same person every week? Is it a volunteer? Is it a paid staff? All of that makes a huge difference. And it needs to be somebody that I can communicate well with, that we have mutual respect for, my horse background and their expertise that they bring, because I'm not going to have the same level of knowledge about this particular herd of horses if I'm only coming there one day a week. And I'm going to rely on that horse handler to really know what Smokey's temperament is like, or whether Blackie is having a bad day, or whether Blaze hurt his foot over the week. Like, I need to count on that horse professional to be able to say, like, hey, this is what happened since the last week when you were here. Blaze is out this week, and what do you need? And maybe we can find an alternative. And if not, then I need to be able to fall back on those other spaces that I've already identified. So the next stage is really looking at, what can this facility offer as far as staffing? How much are they taking care of? Do I literally just need to show up early enough to set up and meet my clients? Or do I need to come earlier? Are there going to be other things that they need from me? And, am I willing to do those? Are they in my contract? Those are all really big questions that when you're partnering with somebody, you want to know. You want to know the details. If you're going to be required to assist with volunteer training, if you're going to be assisting with maintenance of that facility in any way. So then we get kind of to the last part, which is really that administrative piece. How much are you going to charge me to use the facility? What does that give me access to? For how long? Is it, per month, per day, per session? Pricing? Does it change based on my caseload for that day? So if I typically am going to be there from 11 to 3, but this week I only have two clients, and they're both 45-minute sessions, am I still paying for 11 to 3, or am I going to pay for the clients that I'm seeing? All that is worked out in your contract and states, who's responsible for what and what you're going to pay, what that rate is going to be. And those are all really important pieces because when it comes down to the finances of it, we need to know what expenses we need to cover and then what is included in that facility fee or that facility contract. And along with that, as we're looking at that contract, right, we are leasing space at that facility. So our insurance documents need to be updated. We need to know whether they want a release of liability from any of our clients and how the business relationship is going to flow between these two separate, businesses, the facility and whatever business they may be running, whether that's a path facility, a regular riding stable, a park, a pool, a gym, a fitness center, a school. Each one is going to come to the table with something a little bit different. And so thinking about how that looks in a contract setting is really important that we have all of the stipulations down as far as what we're responsible as the therapist and our business and what that facility is responsible for and where we share responsibility. So a lot of times when it comes to promotion, that's a shared responsibility. So I will list that you're a partner facility. If I have any families that have children that are siblings, I will promote your riding program, and you will promote that I'm an occupational therapist coming to your facility. And this is one where I feel really strongly about, and again, is something we cover in detail in Business Barn Raising, because it's so important that you don't give away your marketing to this facility and say, yep, great, find me clients. And then they say, oh, you know, Jane Smith is here doing hippotherapy in our hippotherapy program. And then all of a sudden, the terminology is wrong. What people expect is wrong. And so, you know, having a contract in which you retain control over, you know, what's posted on social media, what's posted on someone's website about you and your business is really important. And that goes the same for them, right? Is that they should be able to be represented the way that they want to be represented if you're sharing about them, their facility, or their programs. And that's something that, you know, as you get to the outreach part, right? So maybe you've agreed to work together, everything is really good, and now you're in the outreach part. That's really important that you have an established way of working together, sharing, communicating with one another. If a potential client reaches out to the facility, what is the pathway that that facility is going to communicate with you? You know, are they just going to refer the person to you? Are they going to send you the person's contact information? That's when you've gotten to that point that you've agreed that you're going to work together. So I'd like to give a couple of scenarios just for fun in barns, in facilities, equestrian facilities that I have been to and considered working with. And I'll give you a kind of a quick up and down of the particular facility. And just in your mind, think if this was you and you were looking for a place to partner with, do you think this would be the place that you would want to partner with? And maybe based on your skill set and your knowledge base and the types of clientele you serve, you would have different choices than I have. And certainly my choices are interesting given where my priorities are right now. And, you know, the way that I want my practice to work. So I, like I said, let's just do this for fun. So the first facility, we'll call this Facility A. Facility A had really nice parking, really open lot, good drainage, had an outdoor and an indoor. Both were in close proximity. It was a small barn, so there weren't a ton of horses to choose from. It did have a bathroom and one wash stall area. There wasn't a lot of other spaces that would be available for me to work in, so it did have some limitations there. And the horses that were there were well conditioned and well cared for. They looked like they knew their job well as beginner riding lesson horses. And the facilities manager was easy to approach, easy to talk to, but was definitely difficult to schedule with. It seemed like programming changed fairly frequently, and so figuring out where my schedule would coincide with their schedule looked like it might be a bit of a challenge, but it met a lot of qualities as far as a physical location. It was, you know, not incredibly far from where I lived. Facility B was a further distance away, and it was advertised as a beginner riding facility. That facility did some pony parties and summer camps and stated that they had therapeutic riding, but there wasn't a whole lot of additional information. And this facility was a little bit further of a distance from my house. And when we arrived, it was very busy. So there was a lot of activity as far as customers there for both riding lessons and some other things that were going on. And so that would be a good potential marketing, networking connection. And when we went into the facility, there was a lot of animals. There were horses and there were chickens. And anybody who knows anything about chickens knows that if chickens have access to any space, that they poop on everything. And so there was a lot of chicken poop everywhere. And so from a hygiene perspective, that was not a highlight. And there was two outdoor arenas, and I would have exclusive use of one of them. And the footing was pretty good in that space. There were two bathrooms available, and the owner was very easy to work with. The owner was very good at communicating what their availability was, and they had quite a large variety of horses, from small ponies up into larger short draft horses. So the potential of what I had to pick from would have been pretty large. Facility C would be a typical riding stable with a busy lesson program. It had a outdoor arena, an indoor arena, and it was a large, like I said, a large lesson barn. So there were a variety of different spaces, activity room, camp room, bathrooms, and it was had a lobby available. And the owner was very interested in doing something good for the community. So there was an altruistic motive as far as the partnership and the interest in the partnership. The horses, again, a good variety of horses, but they were not used to therapeutic or adaptive riding. So that was an area of concern. And thinking about, okay, well, these horses aren't necessarily used to my clientele. And also the other, riding instructor staff for the typical lessons would also not know what I was doing. So they may not be able to anticipate some of the behaviors or things that my clients might do, like throwing a puzzle piece or a ball or something. And so they may not necessarily anticipate some of the things that may happen when my clients were around. So I would not necessarily have exclusive use of the facility. And then facility D, it would be a path center, and it would have an outdoor space and an indoor space that is not large enough to ride in, but would be large enough to do some ground activities. There would be some outdoor space to work in, and a variety of horses from pony to 15 hand size. So, a decent amount of variation between the sizes, and not a ton of parking. So, that could be a challenge if you have, volunteers or students helping you, plus your horse handler, plus your clients as they're coming and going. And no dedicated treatment space, so no particular space that you could set up and have your clinical equipment. So between these four facilities, A, B, C, and D, they all come with benefits and they all come with some limitations. And probably, unless you're designing your own facility, every facility that you go to look at is going to bring up some of these similar characteristics of there's some benefits and there are some drawbacks. And thinking about if you're partnering with one or more than one facility, what does that facility offer? What type of client might be best suited for that particular facility? And what one may not be well suited at all? So I will say that facility B with the chickens was ruled out after a face-to-face visit because just the hygiene perspective, that was something that I didn't feel comfortable with. Farm, yes, it's a farm environment, but I still have a hygiene standard. And chickens in a chicken coop, cool. Chickens everywhere, not so cool, because I've had chickens and they'd come up on my deck and they would poop on my deck. It was really annoying. So no to the chickens. And thinking about pools and the pool locations that we've looked at, one pool location was at a hotel facility, and really nice pool, had a kind of like a patio area near it with some plants and some tables, so you could get a little bit away from the pool deck. And you did not have exclusive use with that facility. The rental fee was significantly higher than other facilities that we had talked with. The water temperature was pretty good there. It was pretty nice. There were no steps to walk into, so ladder, enter, and exit. So that definitely had some challenges when, you know, assessing what populations you might be serving. Another facility would be a community college pool. So a big, like, competitive size pool. It has a number of lanes to work in. It has bleachers for parents to sit in, a locker room facilities. It is a bigger kind of echoey space, also not having exclusive use to that space. So it'd be renting, you know, a part or a lane in that space, and a variety of different equipment on the pool deck, depending on which programs we're running. So thinking about, you know, keeping our own equipment versus our clients getting into other people's equipment, right? That was something that we assessed with that space. Another space, looking at more of a private pool. So that was fenced in within like a community garden setting, right? So there was some nice outdoor nature around it, and it had a fence around it. So that was good as far as client containment, but no protection from the elements. So definitely limited in programming to Memorial Day to Labor Day, at least here in New Jersey. That's kind of the way pools work if you're outdoors. And thinking about clients getting to that location was definitely further out, distance-wise from the majority of where our clients come from. So we'd be asking our clients to travel a further distance. And then another more therapy pool type of setting that had a number of features that would make it nice for therapy, as far as heated water and jets, being able to modify some of the water levels, but more of an open space, again, outdoors, so limiting our ability to provide continuous OT services, good bathroom facilities, but no dedicated like locker room to shower off afterwards. So thinking about, you know, each of these facilities had, again, things that we really liked about them and things that if we could design our own facility, you know, I think that's one of the great things about looking at all these different facilities is that you can say like, oh, if I could take like this locker room and I could take this pool setup and I could take this deck and I could take this parent seating area and put them all together and this lighting and these acoustics, that would be my dream, right? That would be my dream. And when we're partnering, right, we get as close as we can based on where we're at, what our priorities are, who we're serving, what the price point and the contract we can negotiate is going to be. And hopefully, as you've been listening here, you've been able to imagine what these facilities might be like if you were going to partner with them and the things that would be most important to you. Is it distance to your home or distance to your clients? Is it the number of amenities that they have? Is it the people, the staff, how much supportive and welcoming they're going to be to you and your families that you bring to that site? These are all important things to consider when you're considering partnering with a facility. And it is totally beyond doable to incorporate hippotherapy as a therapist without owning a horse. It's totally possible. It is totally possible to work in the aquatic environment without owning a pool. And it's fantastically doable to work in nature-based setting without owning acres and acres of land. So if we can do it, you can do it too. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode. And if you need any help partnering with a facility, be sure to reach out. We might have some tips for you. Thanks for listening to Animals and Aquatics.